Race Fuels is Australia's leading supplier of racing fuels. And with the new Bowsers at Queensland Raceway, it's never been easier to source your racing fuel trackside. Elf Race 102 is imported racing fuel direct from Europe. Offering power and protection, the Elf Race 102 is a popular fuel with racers seeking gains over pump fuel. Improve your lap times with Elf Race 102. Racefuels.com.au for all your fuel at the racetrack. This is the Race Fuels Grassroots Racing Podcast and your hosts, Darren Smith and Gary O'Brien. Well, welcome, ladies and gentlemen. Episode number 44 of the Race Fuels Grassroots Racing Podcast. If you've only just joined us, well, where have you been for a start? We're the world's favourite motorsport podcast. Just look it up. Eventually, maybe by episode 300 or something when we outlast everyone else, but I'm sure Gaz will be long gone by then. I say Gaz out loud and introduce my co-host, who has got a very, or had a very, very busy start to the year. A couple of big race meetings in your hometown, Gaz, to start things off.
Yeah, well, I'm surprised you've still got a voice left after the Vic State Racing at Winton on the weekend. You seem to be talking so much, and I know you love a chat, but when they give you the mic to cover every single race, there was no shutting you up.
I'm asking the questions, and I was asking about your first start of the year in Bathurst, Gaz, so get on with it. Anyway, hey, let's get underway with episode 14, Gaz.
Well,
sorry, 44.
Well, this week we've got a guy on who started in karts, which a lot of the people did, but he started at age 7, 1985, actually. Won 2 national titles, won a couple of, 10 state titles. Did a bit of Formula V, won a national title in Formula Ford, then moved on into Formula Holden, and as a consequence, ended up in the Supercar Championship, or V8 Supercar Championship, as it was called then. Did a bit of development series as well. Daz, I think it's time to say hello to Adam McGrath.
Hi, guys. How are you? Thank you for having me on the world's favourite podcast.
Oh, you've read the script well. He's read the email. He's done it right. He's our favourite guest already, Daz. Straight to the top of the race.
Thanks for the mail.
Straight to the top of the Race Fuels podcast shopping list right there. Adam, fantastic to for you to join us. And fittingly, sadly, we're an audio-only podcast, but you're sitting at a table in your workshop, the fleet of black Adam Macro Racing XLs that compete across the country in the background. Just fantastic. It's very macro from Peter and your brother Tim and yourself. It's always a pleasure to have a chat with someone who is, I'm going to say, from the very outset, when you burst, I didn't know you in karting, but when you burst into the state series scene in your Formula V, it was like, wow, Pete Macro's done well, because he's his first one coming through and then the next one as well. But Gaz has just given a bit of a pricey on your career, and it's horrible when it just gets brought down to 45-second grab like that. But
it's a bit hard to go through the whole list.
It is. It absolutely is. That's what we've got the next hour or so to drag out of Adam. The first question I always ask Adam is, what's your very, very first memory of being at a motorsport event, whether it be trackside, at a circuit event, a rally, a workshop, or whatever it might be? What's your, you think back right back into your childhood, because I'm going to say that's where it was with the Macro boys. Yeah. What's your first memory?
There was a lot of memories, but I think my clearest one would be polishing Dad's Formula Mondial car at the first ever Australian Grand Prix at the Parkland circuit. Remember, after each session, I get the Mr. Sheen out and I'd polish it all up and get it all ready in between then. I do remember that quite clearly. So there's, I also got lots of memories of Winton, you know, still today. I live there half the time at the moment, but, you know, back in the day with the old circuit, I used to ride my three-wheel motorbike down the hill there. all day, every day, while Dad was racing. So I got lots of memories there as well.
I tell you what, straight to the top of the tree, the first ever world championship race in Australia is your first memory of motor racing. It's sad, but it's a downhill slide to there, isn't it? Once the Formula One's left town in Adelaide, it was back to Mallalar and Winton and Calder and all of those tracks,
Yeah,
wasn't it?
but it's still fantastic. It's still something about that place every time I go there. There's just something about the atmosphere at that particular circuit. And I think everyone, I think a lot of people feel the same thing. So it's pretty special place.
Tell us about your first foray into your own racing at a really tender age. You started competing in go-karts, and if you read into it, the years and the titles don't add up. You must have won at least three Victorian titles per year whilst you're in your junior ranks, because there's 10 actual Victorian titles that you won.
Yeah, I remember, first day at the track. I remember that pretty clearly. And once we got sort of serious, it was daylight saving was every night after school until it was not enough light left. Just going round and round and round, and Dad would be testing engines and trying different stuff, and we just put a whole bunch of effort in, and I loved every lap, and I still love every lap. So it's just now I'm sort of getting a lot of enjoyment out of helping other kids.
How was your first race? How did that go?
Don't remember my. I don't even think I remember my first race ever. I don't remember that. I know my first trophy was a first place trophy. So that was I still got that. I remember. I mean, I would have been Oakley go kart track. A Victor lawnmower engine on the side of the go kart. They were the go back then, and there would have been people there. I think at the time when I first started, Ashley Seawood was the man to beat. And he's now obviously running Excels as well. And so it's quite funny that we're back racing against each other. So, oh, great memories though. The karting was really, really great back then. Just great memories traveling around every, well, we were doing. I think when we're in the last few years, we did nearly 40 weeks a year racing in two different categories. So there's always two go-karts in the truck, and just loved every minute of it.
What strange and wonderful tracks were you on then? Because there was a rash of country towns that were running street tracks in that era as well. So you ended up packing your bags and going to somewhere outback somewhere that had no accommodation, and you slept in tents and stuff.
I don't think we ever did that. Well, we had a motorhome, so it didn't really matter. But Dad had one of it's actually a little story about the motorhome. It was actually built by Brian Sheed, who's Mike Borland's uncle. So Dad bought it off Sheedy, and who built his Cheetah racing cars, and that's the connection between me and Mike, which I'm sure we'll touch on later. I did listen to the podcast you did with Mike. You'd be very lucky to get him on. Getting words out of him is not easy sometimes, but so we'd have we. We did lots of street circuits were huge when I was a junior. We did the Bendigo Street Grand Prix, which was just amazing every year. There was also Bairnsdale. We did that street track. They did one in Cranbourne at the shopping centre car park. I remember that quite clearly. Don't recall anything, any other street tracks. Probably have forgotten one, but we raced in Mildura, Swan Hill, Ballarat. Oh, Jesus. Obviously Morwell, we raced there a lot. Mildura,
Do you remember
I'd go
standing
up
on
there
the
and race.
you end up standing on the podium at those any of those tracks where you stood on the podium and you can remember now looking out to the smiling faces looking back at you as you took the big trophy, which normally in those days the trophy were as big as the kids too, they were as tall as
Yeah, that's exactly right. And always, I'd like to thank my dad. That was the
them.
first speech and the first word. Every
Everyone would
kid
have
was the same.
said.
I'd like to thank my dad. Someone got up there, and some of the country kids were like, "I'd like to thank my old man." No, it was a fantastic time, and it was really the golden ages of
Did you
karting,
do
really honest,
interstate
before it really got.
to go interstate at all?
We did a bit. It was different back in those days because there was different rules in Sydney than there, and I think New South Wales, maybe Queensland. I can't remember. there was different rules. There was so we didn't go up that way because obviously all our engines wouldn't have complied or not been as fast. So we sort of stuck to Victoria mainly. Obviously, when we did national championships, we did Perth, we did Orange in New South Wales. I think we ran a national championship there. I did rally one year when all the F1, well, now we're ended up F1 drivers, all the big teams from Europe came out. We did that once. And yeah, but mainly there was enough action in Victoria, I tell you.
Yeah, with all those country towns putting up the water barriers and sending everyone out to cheer
Yeah.
you through the whole weekend, was it really was a heyday of karting. You're obviously still in the family, has been around in karting. Your dad, I'm gonna put him down as legendary engine builder, let alone a race car driver, but there was many a driver that owes their karting success to Peter Macro putting the engine together for him, wasn't there?
Yeah, right. Yeah, like it was Dad and I in the shed every night, and obviously that's where I learned everything, and I'm sort of chip off the old block, I suppose.
Not a bad old block too. When I told Dad we were going to be talking to you, Dad said, "Oh yeah, I fondly remember Peter Macro at Calder in the green Repco Cheetah and those days there as well." And even when we spoke to John Bowie, his name came up, in that era as well when Bowie was racing the Lucky Nuts
Yep,
Walton. That yeah,
correct.
you jumped off the six, as Gaz said, two national and 10 Victorian karting titles. That is amazing, and it's seldom that anyone has got that sort of I guess stat on their very early career. I've got obviously early in their career, it's about karting, and just on that, we'll get back to your story. How cool was it to see James Serra back in a car on the weekend in an XL?
Yeah, it was actually funny because when I had my kart business, I had a kart business and I backed onto his building in Clayton. And I remember in 2016 when I first bought my first XL and I was cutting some laps past his place. He's laughing at me as I've driven past. He's like, "What the hell are you doing?" I said, "Oh mate, this is the next thing." And he's just looking like, I think he was having a bit of a giggle to himself. Like, "What's this guy doing?" And here he is on the weekend. And I said to him, I actually said to him, I said, "Oh, you finally came to your senses. It only took you 7 years. That's a long time ago." And he's laughing. And I actually, he had such an amazing weekend, and he just loved every minute. He goes, "It's the most fun I've had for years." Him, in motorsport. So
A typical Carter
that's
too.
a big,
Typical Carter too, Adam. Like the
big
time
tick for
sheets,
the
his time was green every lap. So every lap he was getting a tenth or a thousandth or whatever. He just kept getting faster all weekend, and that's a sign of someone that's done some karting, that is just getting better and better and better. Let's jump back to, sorry, your story. Sorry about that. So 1995, you sort of kiss goodbye the small track as far as your competition career is concerned. You don't wave goodbye to karting, that's for sure, because it's remained part of your life ever since. But you jumped into a Formula V in 1995 in the Victorian State Series. Tell us about your V, where it came from, what it was, etc.
My first race was in a V that we borrowed or leased, I think, from memory. Thinking back, and that was just a toe in the water. I didn't get my license, OLT, all that sort of stuff. It wasn't until we got serious and we went and bought a Sabre off Mike. I don't even remember any of the results, to be brutally honest. You've probably got more information than I have. I can't remember. It was a pretty short and sweet. We sort of got in there, and I ended up writing it off anyway. Unfortunately, on a Friday practice at Winton, I hit the river just before turn four and went straight down the hill and head first into the wall and destroyed the chassis. So I don't think I drove it again after that. I think we went straight to Formula Ford.
And now they've completely reprofiled that
So
corner, so you're never going to do that again.
probably not. No, that's exactly right. I clearly remember. I can picture in my head just heading towards the wall with all the wheels locked up and just a passenger and head first into the concrete barrier there.
That was the
That's
inglorious end of your Formula V. The next year was obviously
yeah,
1996.
not much. I don't think there was any glory there, so.
So we went to 96 and a big state race series, Formula Ford. And when I looked up that stat, and it's interesting, you've already mentioned the guy. I've actually written there Ash Seawood, because I reckon that was about the same time as he put his backside into a Formula V in the State Series as well.
Ash and I went through Formula Ford together, and we pretty much followed very similar paths in the at the end of the day. Formula Ford in 96, Spectrum 05, the first generation of Spectrums that, and it was that stage when sort of Bugs was at Mike's as well, so learn a lot off him. And we had a really good season from memory. I don't think we won. No, we didn't win the championship, but we had a lot of really good races. And I remember one of the memories of that was I think at Winton, it was going through the sweeper way out in front. I was gone, and the line for the oil pressure gauge, which was old school, wasn't electric, so it had oil in it, came off the back of the gauge behind the dash and just showered me with hot oil going through the sweeper. And
Nice.
that was the end of that race. But no, it was a fantastic start, and we showed some good speed. And I know I think you probably have more stats than I do, but I know there was race wins there. And
I think you finished fourth, actually, fourth in the championship
look there,
in
but
96.
Tell us about that. Was that
it
a
was a great.
genuine father and son type of effort, as you've done with your karting? Was that you and your dad getting a car off Mike and off you go?
With Mike's assistance, Mike helped us all the way through. It was a Mike was always a, and I'm pretty sure it still is today. It was always a 3-year deal to win the championship with Mike. So he was like, State Series, get your toe in the water in 96, 97, do the National Series, learn all the tracks, learn more, learn more, learn more, and then big tilt in the third year.
So in
That
that,
was always the plan, and I
and that
worked
was the
that
year
way.
you won it in 98.
Correct.
And you were eighth in
I ended
97.
up eight, in 97,
Yep.
When you went to the National Series, you'd obviously been around with your dad some of the Victorian tracks. When he was racing, did you venture to let's say the Northern Circuits, Amaru, Oran Park, etc., when your dad was racing the Mondial, or were you kept home?
I think I was there most of the time. I was pretty young. I mean, Dad quit in 95, so 85, I think it was. He quit pretty much when I started, so I was only five, 6 years old. So I don't have a massive amount of. I've got photos proof I was there, so I think I was there a fair bit. And I think Mum and Dad went away by themselves racing a fair bit as well. I don't think it was 50-50. I think if it was Winton, I remember always being at Winton and Sandown. Remember that. I do remember Amaru. I remember being there at some point. And don't necessarily remember Oran Park, but I probably was there at
Yeah,
some point.
I think I met your dad. I think your dad raced at Oran Park in 85. I might have met him there because I would have been covering that series at the time.
I do
So
remember
when you
just a
went,
little
not
story I remember.
sorry.
That's right. I remember I was in the motorhome parked up behind the sheds at Sandown, and me being me, decided to see what a cigarette lighter does, and I've pushed it in, and I've pulled it out red hot, put my finger on it, and I've screamed. Obviously, I don't know how old I was, 5 or 6, and I remember. Well, I don't remember who it was, but apparently it was Peter Brock that came into the motorhome and grabbed me and took me in to show Dad. Well, basically investigate my screams of pain. There you go, little story.
Brocky, the
Spoil
good
things to
family
remember.
man, comes in and rescues you.
Pete, Peter Brock will come in and sort of.
They would have raced together in the Monaro days, didn't they?
In
Back
'59,
in,
they were still.
a bit of trivia for
So they,
you. So
'69.
when you went to the National Series in Formula Ford and started heading off to, some of those other tracks where you hadn't raced before, Mike had laid out that 3-year program, which he's done so brilliantly over, 3, 4 decades now. He's got the program right.
Absolutely.
But when you got to some of those other tracks, was there any of those other tracks where you went out in practice, I'm going to say on the Friday morning possibly, and you came back in after the first practice scratching your head going, oh, I don't even know whether I'm Arthur or Martha on this track. Was there any of them that were not fun?
Yeah, quarter. I always hated quarter. I don't know what it is. I just something about quarter. We didn't click, but I love every other track. There's this one track that I don't know whether it just I didn't click with me or it was boring. I just didn't enjoy it, but it was quarter. So sorry, quarter. But yeah,
And
that's the way it is.
boy, there was a lot of
And we're back there
racing done there.
now. It's great. Yeah, well, that's exactly right. So we were there all the time testing as well. So. I always loved Winton. There was something about Winton, and I still love Winton today. I'm there most Fridays, running our XL experience for young people or old people who want to come and have a run in a car. And got a car that lives there now. And yeah, I'm always there. I just love Winton. It's such a great facility, and it's run really well. And but obviously, you know, there's only that one track holder that I really hated. All the other tracks I love. And I don't remember even really having too many dramas. Just we did test. I can't remember. I think we did test at some tracks. We could, like, we might go to Malala and do a day before. You know, we did test at some at tracks that were easy to get to before the meeting. And yeah, so it was a pretty smooth year. I remember in '97, we certainly didn't have the horsepower that we needed to win the championship. And Mike knew that, but he wouldn't give me a good motor because he wanted me to work harder on myself and work harder on the car and just get the maximum out of me and the car. And that certainly, I understood it when we put a good motor in, and I think we won at the Sandown 500 support race by a bloody mile. So as soon as we bolted a motor in it, we were gone. And that was a good launching pad into the 98 championship.
So 98 was your championship year, and when we spoke to Mike again, something that's lost in an audio podcast, Mike had the Mike smile, so it just a little crease in the corner of his mouth sort of thing appeared, and he was very happy, and he sort of sung the praises of Bugs and yourself in the leading into that sort of that championship. Not 98, just run us through the tracks and the results that you remember you got in that season.
I think we won. I don't know. I have to check the stats, but I think we won like six in a row or something like that. I think we got pole and won six rounds in a row or something. So it was pretty dominant.
Who were you
And yeah,
beating?
everything
Who
clicked
was
that year.
the opposition that you're beating?
Oh, Jesus,
Was it
it was so
Garth?
bad.
Was it Garth?
No, that was before. Garth and Marcus were the year earlier. They were '97. And there was Christian Jones,
Yep. Who was in
Kim
your
Lane.
team?
Christian was my teammate. Tim Lay. I think Ashley Siebel was in there. I think did Will Power run that year?
He ran the
I think
same
Will
year
Power
as
was in the
Mark
field.
Winterbottom, whatever year that was.
Not 97. In
Yeah.
there then.
Yep.
Who else do I remember? There was a Phillip Seifert was in there as well.
Oh, yeah.
Who else? I have to look. I think
So,
back Christian
Tim.
Murchison.
Yeah, okay. Well, Tim Lay and Christian Murchison, you would have met up with them again when you were competing in the Australian Drivers' Championship in Formula Holden, wouldn't you?
That's correct. Yeah, the year after '99, we didn't do the full championship, but yeah, we raced with them in '99 as well. Yeah.
I did notice too in '98 that you had a run in the AMP 1000 at Bathurst in a Honda Civic. You want to tell us how that all came about? Like, this would be the first experience with
Yeah, so
something with a roof.
Tony Longhurst organised all that through a good mate of his. I can't remember his name. I should, but I don't. And yeah, he just wanted to get me some laps in the car because obviously, I mean, back then you didn't need a super licence or anything. You just jumped out of a Formula Ford, and I think I did maybe 20 laps around Lakeside in in one of Tony's supercars and went straight to Bathurst. So and it was great, but But yeah, he gave me an opportunity just to have a go in the little Honda Civic around Bathurst before we went there with the supercar, and got plenty of
Just,
laps, I think, but I think it broke a drive shaft in the end.
yeah, suspension or something like that, which could have been a CV or something. Yeah, that year, of course, we had the two events at Bathurst, the AMP 1000 and the FIA 1000, followed shortly after, where you teamed up with Tony in the EL Falcon.
Yeah, it was actually with Alan Jones that year. That was
Oh, beg your
98,
pardon, yeah.
and then 99. So AJ in the Komatsu car, I drove that in 98. 98. Yep. And then in the Castrol car with Tony in 99.
So in 99 there was that foray into Formula Holden. You did nine races, and of which four of them you ended up on the podium. So you obviously acquitted yourself well. That was a, in that era, that class was, I'm gonna say, at the crest of the wave, because it wasn't long after that it fell off a pretty steep cliff. But at that point, that championship was hard to get on the podium with you. Everyone was fast, the cars were fast. Tell us about, I guess, the movement from, in what is 4 years, from a Formula V in the State Series to a Reynard 91D and a Reynard 95D in the Australian Drivers' Championship. Just the, I'm going to say, the driver experience and the preparation you had to put in between those, the differences of those vehicles.
I think that the transition, I don't remember it being a difficult transition. I think, and that just it bodes just so massively on how good Formula Ford is, and how much you learn in Formula Ford. And it's, but I remember my head falling off, like my neck was stuffed after the first day at Phillip Island. I remember that. But the biggest thing to get your head around was, you go through turn one and you take it a bit easy, and the car's moving, and you think, hang on, like I'm on the edge already. But then you got to think, like, hang on, I've got aero, I've got aero. So in the end, I knew it was flat. I knew turn one was flat. I knew I had a fair bit of downforce on. And so I just, one lap, I just sucked it up and went flat, and the thing did it easy. It was a lot easier to go flat than it was to go gentle and just like back off and roll a little bit. It was like 155, 152 mile an hour flat through turn one, and just does it easy. So amazing experience to drive those cars, and I'm very lucky to have done that because they are a pretty cool car. And then obviously we changed cars and went to Arthur Abrams' team halfway after the first round, I think it was, and got into the 95, and we I think we got pole at the Adelaide round, and that was fun driving that through the streets.
Yeah, an interesting
Differences
driving
between
for a car owner that's a racer himself.
and there was a big pile up at Sandown, I think. I vaguely remember on the main straight. I think I've seen the video of that year. So,
So
but
Arthur
yeah, it
Abrahams
was just so expensive.
being the team owner and a racer as well, and I think he was still putting the helmet on and the onesie and the booties as well himself. What was it like driving, I'm going to say, with and against the guy that owned the car that you were driving?
None of that sort of stuff really fazed me. I just went out and did a good job, as the best job I could possibly do, and doesn't really sort of I don't didn't really think about that sort of stuff, to be really honest.
So, what was it you thought about, Adam?
Getting pole, not crashing. That was just blinkers were on, and it was just, I've got to get my head around this thing and get every bit out of it I can.
Did Arthur ever afford you a new set of tyres on the car in that time frame?
Very much doubt it. Very much doubt
You know he's still
it.
racing, don't you? He races sports cars in WA.
Is he?
Yeah.
He's racing a Lambo, isn't he?
Oh,
Yeah. Yep.
oh, that'd be right. Yeah, he can't help himself. But that was awesome. It was a great opportunity, and it didn't work out the way we wanted it to be, but obviously that was a good launching pad to start doing enduros every year, and obviously Super 2.
Did you look to do the 2000 series in Formula Holden, or was it like you, like I said, it looked like it was about to fall off the cliff, that category, and time to move on?
So we were sort of just the crash at Sandown really hurt us. I think that was close to $100,000 weekend.
Wow.
Because I had a crash in practice as well, I think. So that really hurt the budget, and it just all sort of fizzled out. And obviously, I had a drive at Bathurst that year anyway, so we just focused on that. And I went up and ended up sort of staying with Tony and working with the team for a bit that year, and just focused on that and moving forward into a career in supercars.
So obviously Tony Longhurst was the, I'm going to say, the guy that spotted your talent and funded that, or helped you get into that Civic drive initially, and with a view to slot you into his team as the next big thing. Tell us about the conversations with Tony and how that led to you becoming, coming from, I'm going to say, the ladder of performance, if you like, to then slotting into a supercar drive.
Well, I suppose I was very lucky because the 98 drive with Tony's team was a prize for winning the Formula Ford Championship. So whether he liked me or not, he was getting me that year because that was the prize. And obviously, I did enough that year to for him to want to put me next to him in the main car. So I think it just stemmed from there. It really wasn't too many, I suppose, conversations or anything like that. But he was after 98. He was like, "Come and drive with me next year." He did a great job. And I remember him yelling at me once for going too fast. So one practice session, I think I'd done a 13.5 or something, and I was like, "I'm just cruising around." And he's like, "What the hell was that? What's going on?" And I'm like, "Oh, I don't know. I was just felt good, and I just punched out a half a reasonable time, and I don't even remember what times they were doing that year, but I think it was pretty sharp because he wasn't very happy about it. He's, just cool it down and keep it easy. Move around.
A lot of cloak and
The owner
dagger stuff
drivers,
going
mate.
on.
I think so. Owner drivers, they didn't like the young guns coming in and doing a reasonable time, I'll tell you for sure.
Yeah, they're hanging on, weren't they? That's for sure. Hey,
Yeah.
Adam, tell us about heading to the mountain that very first time, and you're gonna be driving in a supercar, because by that time, by 98, 99, supercars was, arguably, again, like Formula Holden, was well and truly, it was on everyone's lips. Everyone was talking about supercars now. Whatever this Group A thing was, that was well gone by then. Tell us, you're leaving Melbourne, you're going to go and drive for a Queensland-based team. Tell us how you got there and the journey up there, and the first time heading out in the mountain with the, I'm going to say, with the that big responsibility.
I remember. I remember driving up there in my old beaten up Gemini with my at the time girlfriend, and we had a little caravan with a caravan parked down the road, and we just kept it pretty low key. And I really don't put. I learned very early on in my karting career, if I put too much emphasis on stuff, and I make the meeting bigger than I need to make it in my head, then I'll probably make a mistake. So, quite often I'll just go in there and go, "Oh, yeah, Bathurst, whatever, supercar, whatever." Just try and keep my head, don't put any too much importance on it. I think that was the best way for me to work around it and stay consistent and not make any mistakes, and not put too much pressure on myself, which was hard. I just jump in the car and just do the best I could, and I didn't really put it on a pedestal, so to speak, even though I should probably.
Who was running the team then? Who was, I guess, who were you reporting to engineering wise to help you, I guess, knock off your debut year and give you the best possible chance to do a good job?
So Brett Bull was the team manager from memory. And Bo Seaton was in the engine department. So I used to always get in trouble for sitting in there with Bo and talking engines all day, not doing any work. But I actually learned a lot. I learned a massive amount off Bo, and we became really quite good friends when we were there in Queensland. And it was I've always just not tried to just make things not big in my head, just to try and just to try and keep it on the down low, and just focus on doing a good job.
I'll put this question to both you, Gaz, and to Adam. How many modern day supercar co-drivers are arriving at Bathurst in their beaten up old Gemini? I think Will Brown flew in his Piper Cherokee, didn't he, for to Woomba? You know, like it's the proper thing, yeah. It is interesting. And just before we move on to the, I'm going to say the, you know, the really cool and successful part of your career in as far as a supercar driver is concerned, I did have a question about a HG Kingswood with triple Webbers on it at the Oakley Kart Club and your first ever experience of driving a car.
On the tree
Yeah.
in horse acts for HG,
There you
no, I
go. He
used to
wasn't
live up
sure
in
whether
the
you'd remember it.
no, I remember. I wouldn't forget that too
Actually,
much easy. And the fact that he was a driver, that was his baby.
it was.
A little bit of trivia. I got my license in a HT 3 on the tree 253 V8.
Nice, nice.
Yeah,
Worth a
nice.
fortune, huh?
Sorry?
Worth a
What was
fortune
that,
now.
Adam? Oh, yeah, it was it. But it was a wagon. That was the only problem. It was my dad's work vehicle.
Yes, wagon to be sought after these days, though.
Oh,
That
yeah.
wagons are cool.
They sound, it is, it sounded nice too. 253 when you got it up and running. Used to be great late at night, zooming home from work.
So we you've had that debut at Bathurst with Tony. How did that end up, by the way? What was your result, or what was the at the end of the day on Sunday afternoon?
In
Yeah.
99, I think we were maybe, I think we were between 7th and 10th, I think in that range. And I think we were like 10 laps to go, the diff blew up coming up Mountain Straight, coming, he just came out of Hell Corner and had lost all drive.
Who was in it at the
Tony was.
So that was good.
Hey,
Well,
in that era as well, Adam, you're talking pre-control tires, because you did have the opportunity to drive on those, the Holy Grail, the Bridgestones, when they were you drove some cars on those. What was the Longhurst car on? Was that Yokohamas at that stage? Or
Yokos.
on Yokohamas,
Yep.
I remember how much grip I had. Like, it was crazy how much grip. I remember even like the first test day at Lakeside, you just fire the thing into turn one and clear the brake and turn in, and it would just go up on two wheels just with the grip. You didn't even need to hit a curb. It had that much grip. And it was a lot of fun. But mate, it actually did make it easier, I suppose, in terms of it was on a hard tire like they ended up on. It probably made the transition a little bit easier for me at, having a softer tire and a bit more grip. You could get away with a bit more, but once I went to the hard tire, they were tricky cars to drive, and you needed to be in them a lot to really get the most out of them.
The Bathurst, as far as the tire ball went, was an equalizer, wasn't it? There wasn't a lot of difference between a Dunlop, the Bridgestone, and the Yokohama. It was just on other tracks where the Bridgestone seemed to be the superior tire.
Yeah, exactly. And I think 99 was the last year of that war. I'm pretty sure we were on the control tire in 2000, from memory. When
I
I was
think
at
when you're
Rock Vale with John
John
Faulkner.
Faulkner's, yeah, they had Bridgestone still, so 2000. You're on Bridgestones.
You would have been on Bridgestones. But was that the control tire that year or not?
I
I
think
can't remember.
01, by the
No.
time you were driving with Larry, was 01.
Okay,
Okay,
cool.
cool.
Well,
There you go.
according to our information, 2001, the Perkins car was on Bridgestone, so that must have been the control tire to start with.
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool. There you go. So, yeah, I actually went and worked full time with John Faulkner, and I was doing a bit of everything, a bit of driving, a bit of PR with the PR guy there, who I'm still good friends with, Craig Hollowell. And I also ended up in the fab shop helping build the new car that we built that year, and pit stop, and I did a bit of everything, which was a great experience. It was really, really good, and it was I was very lucky to get that experience to have a bit of a crack at every part of a race team.
So then Bathurst again, and you, I guess, probably a bit of a prickly kind of a bloke, his reputation with LP, but you joined the Perkins Racing squad as well as a co-driver, and what are you now, fourth year of doing two enduros a year in the main game. So there's a fair I'm going to say aura around Adam Macro as a guy that can deliver on those big events. You've had Longhurst, you've had Faulkner, and all of a sudden LP's calling you up to come and drive for him. Tell us how that phone call goes, and if you don't start with cock.
hell, I don't even remember. I don't necessarily remember the phone call. I remember having a meeting with him. It was pretty short and sweet. This is what I want. This is what I'll pay you. We're testing on this day. Make sure you're late. But the biggest thing I remember with LP was we're at Bathurst and I'd actually locked a brake into the chase and the tyre had blown out. And I got it back to the pits, no damage apart from a flat tyre. And I remember he's pulled me aside and go, "Now, what happened there?" And I said, "Mate, just locked the brake. I didn't let the car settle enough before I broke. Blah, 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 blah. No excuses." He's like, "Oh, okay. Well, just make sure it doesn't happen again." And I know he was expecting a typical race driver excuse, but I wasn't going to give it to him. So I think he was pretty happy with that. I remember it was like, "This car will be on pole if I put Russell in it, so don't ask for any changes, and it is what it is, and it'll be a good thing, and just shut up and drive it, basically." So, but no, it was a good thing, and it was just disappointing we didn't finish.
Did you get any time in the workshop at LP's then? Because that would have also been an interesting experience, following around Larry Perkins.
No, I don't think I did that year. Don't even know what I was doing. I had a full-time job, I think. Yeah, I had a full-time job, and I was also busy building my little Datsun. Do you remember
Ah, yeah, of course I
that?
do that. I was actually going to say, I'm hoping you were going to say my full-time job was building the
Some reason
120i.
that became my 120Y became this magical. I don't know. It was the biggest piece of junk, but it was fun. It was fast, which I don't mind.
It was
But
fast. It had
that
some
was a lot of fun
good
for me.
straight line handling, that thing, didn't it?
Yeah, I spent all the money went on the engine, and I forgot about the rest of it.
Yes, came into the improved production scene in
It's
Victoria
still.
at a time when Leanne and Tony Floriani were the ones to beat, and you came in with this snotty nosed car, and everyone's like, "This Bathurst guy, what's he going to do?" And I'm like, "Well, we remember when he raced Formula V and Formula Ford, and he's a bit of a steerer." And I think you put it on pole by like the length of the straight first time out at Sandown.
Yeah, the thing was quick at Sandown. It was really love Sandown. The brakes didn't really like it, but it was bloody quick in a straight line once I got the engine right. Because obviously we had the inlet restrictor and all that sort of stuff to deal with, and trying to cram an SR20 into a Datsun was not easy in terms of engineering the intercooler and trying to keep it cool. And we had water sprayers spraying water over everything, and it was a lot of fun. And I learned a lot. I learned a massive amount about. Just race cars in general, building that car, and it was a bunch of fun.
So it did have the
And
restrictor fitted at him, yeah.
yeah, no, it did. Yeah, we actually it made. I think it
Thanks.
made.
Look at the look on his face. Did Darren ever tell you about his exploits in under 2 liter
Yeah,
improved production?
mine was over 2 years prior to Adam joining the series, so I was done by then. Thank God, because he would have hosed me.
I remember it made 200 kilowatts from 4,000 to 7,000, like flat line, just boom, straight across the thing. And I remember Simon from you probably remember Simon from NISPRO. He tuned it for me, so I worked there for a bit, and so he tuned it for me, and he got it really, really going well. But I remember we pulled the restrictor off one day. I was mucking around on the dyno with somewhere else and pulled the restrictor out, and I think it made nearly 500 pretty easily. Just on nav gas, so that would have been fun, but I wasn't game to try that at the track. But we just did it for a bit of fun. But yeah, no, it was a great little car. We only weighed because it had an aluminium cage. Because it was I bought the only reason I went for that car was because I found a car that was logbooked with an aluminium cage. Because I was just like, get the weight out of it. And it was like 870 kilos or something, wringing wet. So,
And a bolt-in
yeah.
aluminium
But
cage
apparently,
too.
bolt. I did get David Brown to put a few extra bars in it for me because I thought, oh, this is pretty dodgy, a bit sketchy, and it was still sketchy. But no, it's still around. It's actually still in Melbourne, and it's actually not hasn't been stuffed around with too much from the configuration I had it. So I think it's parked in a shed in Melbourne somewhere.
Often what happens with those improved production slash club cars is that the guy that built it is massively fast in it, sells it on to the next guy, and the next guy just scratches his head and goes, I can't get within a decade of those times, and then you never see the car again.
Yeah, that's exactly right. So it was pretty nasty, but it was a bunch of fun, and it kept me racing and kept me just. I just wanted to keep racing and didn't want to get just stand around and sort of and not be driving something, So at least if I approach the supercar team for an endurance drive, I could at least say, well, I've done 6 or 7 rounds in this car, which is pretty quick, but it's a bit of a handful. So I've had to call on every ounce of talent to get the thing around the track, and
And look,
that's exactly what happened.
it worked because it, like Steve Owen when he went back to Formula Ford for a season, it worked. It kept you in the game, and really, it basically led to some of the best times in your career, like winning the development series. The year before was Dean Canto. The year after you was Tony Dalberto. So that in itself just says how competitive that era in the development series was becoming.
Yeah, no, it was a great era, and I was very lucky because I drove with I had a year off. I think 02 I had a year off, then 03 I drove with FPR when it was the first year of FPR.
With
That was
Darren.
with
With
Darren, yeah.
Darren. Yep.
And the year 04 I drove with Alain Menu.
How did you find him?
It was a ripper bloke. We became really good friends, and we had a great fun, and a great year. And he's the loveliest guy you'll ever meet. And that's where the connection between me and Triple Eight and Howard Racing came together. Because I'm pretty sure he never told me, but I'm pretty sure he rang Roland for me.
Oh, wow.
So we together. So,
Because
because I've got. Yeah, I'm pretty sure that Alain had rung Roland, and then Roland had rung Mark Howard because Mark Howard rang me and said, "Do you want to come and drive for my team?" And I remember saying to him, "I said, you give me a good car, I'll win you the championship." And that was my promise to him. And I'm like, and he's like, "Yep, no worries, done deal. Get on a plane tomorrow if you can." So we got on a plane and moved to the Gold Coast.
The only reason I asked about Alain was the fact that John Cleland came out here and did a couple of races. He did with Brock, and then he did with Scafie as well. That he and Alain didn't get on at all,
Oh,
because
really?
they were rivals in the BTCC, obviously. Alain, I think, was with Renault, and John was with Vauxhall, and they had a few coming togethers, and there was no love lost between that pair.
No,
But
no,
there
no.
were personality clashes, obviously.
Yeah, that's exactly right. I do recall going back to the karting days. I remember on a Saturday, if we were testing, not even racing, we'd all congregate in the canteen at Oakley and watch the BTCC races back then. No, it just it still the best racing,
Oh,
amazing
yeah.
era
I thought
back
the
then.
best
It was
era was
so hard.
I thought before they put the wings on them, it was the best era. Because there was a
Hundred
lot
percent,
of biff and bash, likes of Sofa and Tim, can't remember, Harvey. That was the cars to beat the BMWs, obviously. Then
Just
Alpha
going,
came
just yeah,
along,
exactly.
Just going, Adam, back to that 2005 when you joined Triple Eight in the better electrical car. I was a fifth at Sandown, and quite the cheer when your smiley face stepped up on the podium in third at Mount Panorama. It's a crazy small amount of even motorsport people that get the opportunity to step on that podium, whether it be third in the Bathurst 6 hour in Class Invitational Z or something, let alone the Bathurst 1000, and you're up on the podium. Please, please tell me you remember every second of that and the cheering and the accolades of just being on. You know, it's the biggest podium in Australian motorsport.
Oh, 100%. And I, it's a day I'll never forget. It was a mega opportunity, and I gave it everything that I had, and the car came back pristine, ready to race again, pretty much not a mark on it. And it was just was one of those days that just sort of fell our way, and we just chipped away. We did our own lap times. We just cruised around, did our own lap times. If someone came up behind us, we let them go, and we just kept doing our pace and stayed out of trouble, and that's what wins or gets you podiums at Bathurst. You just got to truck around and look after the car.
What was it about Triple Eight when you'd joined, you'd been in three or four other supercar teams and teams of note as well by that stage? What was it about that garage, those staff and those cars that was, in the ensuing 20 years has just proven to be the complete and utter package at winning races?
The one percenters. It's all about the one percenters in that, and just the way that the place is run. It's like a well-oiled machine. Everything's organized. Everyone knows their job. Everyone's got set jobs, and you do not do anyone else's job, even if you feel like you could. Everyone's got their job, because that way, if something goes wrong, Roland or whoever's running the place at that time could know exactly who was responsible and hold them accountable. So it was a well-oiled machine. Even back then, the cars were run like airplanes. So every car had barcodes on everything and scans. So they knew to kept the miles on all the parts. And obviously, Ludo was running the engineering department back then with Dutto, who's still there. He was my engineer for that round. He was my engineer for that year. Yeah, you can. I learned so much as just a as a as a you know as a mechanic as I did as in driving that year on how to get the most out of a race car. And they really pushed the limits, and just found all those little one percenters that find you 2 or 3 tenths, which makes all the difference.
Do you ever have any conversations with any of the guys you work with at Triple Eight in the like now these days?
So my engineer from the Super 2 car, he's a Triple Eight. When they started building XLs, he rang me during COVID. So we catch up occasionally when we bump into each other. And I've spoken to Dutto a few times, and I raided the parts bin after they'd finished building XL to see what they had left when I was building this car behind me. So I got a few little trinkets from the parts store last year. I think, yeah, last year when I built that car. So yeah, always keep in touch, with whoever I know, and it's good.
What was it you did different in 2006 in the development series to the other competitors in that particular series in that particular year? It is without doubt heady days of it. I mean, Super 2 is still super competitive, but they were big fields then. You were getting over 25 cars in a field.
I think the chassis I had was very, very good. It was Ludo's first car. It was the first car that he ever built, and it was an absolute. It was a beautiful car. But to be brutally honest, I think that me and my engineer worked together very well, and I really knew what I wanted from the car, and I knew how to make it go fast, even if it was average to drive. it didn't need to be good to drive, it needed to be fast. That was the biggest thing. And I remember one round we really dominated was Morgan Park, Wakefield Park. And I had that thing set up with so much drive and the roll center in the rear that you'd have to turn 20 meters before the corner, it had that much understeer. But when you got on the throttle, it would just hike a wheel in the air and just drive out, and it would look after the rear tire forever. It would just truck along and truck along. So sometimes you've got to drive a race car that's going to be good over a distance, and it's going to be faster over the race distance than actually, and even if it's ugly to drive, if that's what's going to achieve, then you just drive it and put up with it and make the most out of it. And it was probably, I think I probably held everyone up for two or three laps, but then they'd blow their tires off, the rear tires would be gone off their car, and my car would be just getting better and better and better and better. So I think the engineering side of it, which I love so much, my understanding of all that, which really clicked after being at Triple Eight, and obviously FPR as well, and some of the bigger teams that really started clicking on how to get these cars to work. And I think my understanding of the engineering side of things really helped me that year.
Because you're up against some really good opposition that year as well.
Got DJR and
Yeah.
oh,
Tony Delberto was running. Alan Gurr was strong at some rounds, I think, is from memory. Matt White.
yeah, Matty White was always there.
Luke Gilden.
Cruikshank had a team that year, I think.
Yeah,
Yeah,
Dick
certainly Luke
Johnson
Gilden
had
was in the pace then too. Then he was rising into the positions.
yeah,
Lockie was there as well.
DJR had Grant Denyeau. Luke drove there as well. Andrew Thompson. We had Jeff Emery, Nathan Pretty, Shane Price, Jack Perkins, Kane Scott did rounds. I didn't go that well, but Damien White, Mark Porter, the late Mark Porter. So yeah, strong fields, strong opposition.
Yeah, no, it was a great series, and yeah, no, I was very lucky to get the opportunity, and I still to this day thank Mark Howard for that opportunity. It was an amazing win-win for both of us in terms of I got to do what I love and prove myself, and he got his championship that I promised him, so I was very lucky that none of the it's unfortunate that. There may be a couple, but it would be very few people these days that would get that opportunity and not have to pay a lot of money.
Your move then came over to, which was a new team that Jason Bright and Chris Jewell put together at Britec, a Melbourne-based team, not too far from home, down in Dandenong there, with at the time, a state-of-the-art, facility. It was they seemed to have a lot of money dripping out of Ford that kept that whole show going. The success wasn't quite the same with Britec, and you joined that team obviously with an aim to become a full-time supercars driver, and the whole Fujitsu thing there as well. Just tell us about how that came about after your time with the Better Electrical 888 team.
Yeah, I kind of knew that, I could have kept probably driving. Like I think in 07, I could have driven a 888. I actually not rolling back, would you believe? And went and drove with Britec. And 06, I can't remember now. But I was like, I don't want to do endurance races for the rest of my life. I want to actually get comfortable in a car and do some proper miles, because I know I can be really quick if I just get some more Ks under my belt. Because I don't go too bad when I drive it only twice a year. So imagine if I was in the seat all the time. And there was probably a reasonable chance that that was going to happen with Britec. But unfortunately, I think the GFC hit around that time, and all the blue chip sponsors pulled out, and I lost my endurance drive. Mainly because I think someone offered them a lot of money for it, and which is the way, that's just life.
Because Jose Fernandez and Marcus Marshall were in the mix in that team as well, around about the same time, weren't they?
Yeah, they were. Yeah. But I can't even
Well,
remember who dropped.
Warren Luff was there as well. Luffy.
I drove with Luffy the first year. Then the second year, in 07, I drove with Bridie. Did I
Jason.
do? I must.
Yep.
I did 2 years.
He did
Yeah, that was the year. Two with Bridie.
two with
Yeah.
Jason.
So,
Yeah.
yeah. So 07, we were going pretty well until the rain came. Pretty famous sort of
Oh, up the
year.
top of the mount where the
Yeah.
whole lot of them all hit the wall.
We came out. I think we came out of the pits and they. With fresh tires, and we were a pit stop ahead or something like that. We had a massive lead, but those cold tires and wet track didn't work. And then 08, I don't know. I think we might have finished eighth or something. Nothing flash, I don't think. But we just didn't have. I know the car was very good. Like over the top of the mountain, we were inside the top five or six cars in terms of lap time, but just didn't have the grunt up and down the hill. That was the horsepower that we were lacking in that particular car. But the chassis was. It's very good.
Is there anything that you can relate at those Bathurst weekends from, your shift from working with Ludo and Mark Dutton and then working with the crew at Britec? Is there anything that stands out in your mind that made it different? Not necessarily better or worse, but was there a different attitude or feeling towards any of the team?
No, I mean everyone was exactly the same amount of passion. Don't get me wrong. Every team that I drove for had the same amount of passion. I think just everyone had their own way of doing things in terms of how they set the car up, how they talk about the setup of the car, yeah, that's the main difference. Philosophy. Everyone's got their own philosophy, and they go with that, and some of them work, and some of them don't.
So the supercars thing after Britec sort of stalled, didn't it? Really, that pretty much put a full stop on, well, what was a decade in some really good teams in supercars for you.
Yeah, exactly. So, I mean, obviously, as I said, the GFC hit. So, paid endurance drives were certainly not on the card, I don't think, at that time. And I just started a family. So, I've had pretty good 10 years. We'll see what happens. But I really need to put my head down and make some money for the family and provide for them. So, I sort of focus a little bit on, getting that up and running and having kids, I suppose. That was, get a job and stop just scraping through to trying to race cars.
You can
I
hang your
was
hat
getting a bit younger.
on a decade, Adam, because there's a lot of people in the ensuing decades that don't
Yeah.
leave with a
And
paycheck. They bring the paycheck with them.
yeah, exactly. And as I said before, I'm very, very lucky to have had those 10 years and, most of the time I might have done stuff for free, but most of the time I got paid to do it, and I never paid a cent, never bought a drive my whole time, apart from the Datsun. Cost me a fortune. But yeah, I was very lucky to have that opportunity, and with basically as a professional.
Yeah, it's
There's
a
a couple of
pretty
things.
cool decade in some very competitive seasons, wasn't it, Gaz?
There's a couple
Yeah.
other things I wanted to touch on. The V8 Ute, you did
Oh, yeah.
three races in that series in 2011, and after that, I wanted to get your impression of the Dodge Viper and that you would have raced it at the 12-hour.
Yeah, so the Ute was a fun weekend. Very interesting. I remember the Holden back then, so we're in a Holden. The Holden, you couldn't hit the curbs, otherwise the shocks would bend every time you hit the curb. So I sort of cruised around in practice and sort of got the feel for the car. I remember it being pretty ugly to drive, to be really honest. And I sort of said to the boys, for quality, I'm like, get some shocks ready, boys, because I'm sending it. I'm not going to do it around the back.
There's the Adam Macro. Send it.
And I think, yeah, exactly. And I think I was, I think I was like 20th or something in the practice sessions because I didn't want to damage the car. I wasn't paying any money and I didn't want to sort of do any,
Whose
any
car
more
was it?
damage that I. You know what?
Who's
I should know, but I can't
yeah.
remember. Too long ago. I cannot remember the name of the guy. It's probably in my phone still. Like it's, I don't know. So, but I should know his name, but I can't remember. He's, I think he's in Albury or something. I can't.
Oh, that Brad Jones
It's
guy.
too long ago.
Nah,
No,
you
what
know, what color
a
was it? That might
Maybe.
help. You remember
We
what
had
color?
Auto Pro on it. Auto was Auto Pro car from memory.
Adam and
Auto
Marjorie.
One.
Auto
Yeah.
One, it
Anyway,
was.
so then I in quali I decided to I was like, no, nah, I'm just gonna send this thing over the curbs and I think we ended up P8 or P7. I think the car was like 10 positions smaller the car had been all year over one lap. And then I think the second lap after that, the shocks collapsed and that was the end of that.
And the second part of that, Gaz asked about the Richard The
Bendall
Viper.
Viper.
Oh, that's right. The Viper. What a weapon! Absolute beast of a thing. It was great to get the opportunity to go back to the mountain after so many years. I think I hadn't driven anything fast for nearly 10 years when I jumped in that thing, and we went and did a test at Phillip Island, and I think the first 5 laps felt like I was strapped onto a rocket ship. It felt very fast, and then by lap 10, it all felt it wasn't that quick anymore. It was amazing how quick your body adjusts to
Gas,
you know to the sport, and it all just comes back again, you know. And what an absolute menace of a car that thing was, and you know, in the first, well, when we got to the mountain. I think during the race we couldn't go under a 206. I think it was because it was invited class or something.
yeah, correct. Yep.
And obviously being Richard's car, it had every Motec bell and whistle in it that we could find. So it had a screen and a lap timing. And I remember during the race, because every lap I was getting a bit quicker and feeling more comfortable and getting back in the swing of things. And I was went under the bridge to the last corner. I looked down at the predictive lap and it had like a 4.5 on the dash. And I'm like, and I had someone up my arm, and I'm trying not to do a six, and I really wanted to do a 4.5, but I had to back out of it because I didn't want to get a bit of penalty. No, it was a rocket ship. I remember,
That
I think Lounsey was Lamborghini or something. I can't remember what he was driving, but I remember he blew past me through the tight stuff, and then down the chute, I just blew past him again into the chase, and then he outbraked me because. Some of those cars in the 12-hour race, the braking on those cars with the aero is just
yeah.
phenomenal. And didn't have the aero, it didn't have the brakes, but what it lacked for in aero and brakes, it made up for in horsepower. I think it had like
The
800.
that car was the fastest car in a straight line in the 12-hour. There's no doubt. I might not have been the same year, but the year the Bentley was there when they were white, must have been the first year they went. I was just standing down a hill corner watching it go up the hill, and the Vipers come out of the corner just in front of the Bentley, and I think the overseas guys thought, "Oh, we'll sort this bloke out going up the mountain straight." And there was about 8 or 10 car lengths before they disappeared out of sight. It was gone.
Yeah, I remember there was some vision that I've still got on my phone somewhere where I was holding up about, you know, five or six R8s and Lambos and Bentleys and all these beautiful, you know, race cars and holding them up over the top, and then I gave them a bit of room and they got past me, but then by the time we got a third way down Conrod, I had 10 car lengths on them or something. It's just bunch of fun.
Was that
Nothing
with
like a bit of horsepower to
was that with Ben Schutz and Jamie Augustine? Is that year or Dean Lilly involved there?
Jamie won the Daytona that weekend. It was, yeah, Ben Schutz, me, and oh, I apologise to whoever drove was a third driver because I cannot remember their name.
Yeah, it was that was an absolute rocket ship, wasn't it? I do
Oh,
remember
6 years.
that fondly.
Yeah,
Adam,
unfortunately, the splitter broke. The front's delaminated and they couldn't repair it in time.
that's how quick an hour and 15 minutes goes in podcast chat land. And you're clearly in the workshop, and you've mentioned you've got a family, so we don't want to hold you up for too
Oh,
much longer.
no,
But at
all right. I'm
this
having a good
point,
time.
It's actually good, isn't it? And Hoss said the same thing. He goes, "Geez, I've forgotten all of these things," and then all of a sudden they come flooding back to you. I expect a text
Really cool.
message with a team owner of a Ute team and your
I love
co-driver in the Viper at some point when you go, "Oh, I remember who it was."
it. Yeah. Freak.
Wasn't Ray Hislop, was it? Because he was in that team 1 year.
No. I just don't. I don't. Not. No. I'm not
He
good.
would have
I
known it
wasn't
was
that
Ray
year.
Hislop because Ray would have hosed him in the 120Y and improved production, I'm sure.
Oh, that bike, yeah. Race car. Wow. Yeah. But,
Sorry, yeah, it's
no,
about this time in the
it's,
podcast where I ask a couple of fairly poignant questions. First of all, the person in motorsport, it doesn't have to be a driver. It doesn't have to be a crew member. It doesn't have to be an official. It's just someone that you drive into the racetrack and you see their car or you see them walking off or their back of their head or you've gone, oh, that team's here, so that person will be here. That sort of antagonistic person that just gets under your skin. And a two-part question, and then your single best moment in motorsport, absolute single best moment that when you're 95-year-old Adam Macro and you look back and you go, yep, that was the best.
Best moment in motorsport. I mean, obviously, Bathurst podium is pretty hard to beat. That's pretty major. Winning the Super Two title was, right up there as well. It was a real turning point, and I thought, oh, we're getting there. We've won another title because I won every title I've ever entered, pretty much. So that was good. Yeah, just those two are probably the biggest thing. And just being able to just drive at Bathurst, I suppose, every year and just, with great teams. And it's all a privilege. It's all a massive privilege. Not many people get to do it. And so, yeah, just, very, very lucky to have had the opportunity to do what I've done. In terms of, what was the first question? I think you broke up a little bit, to be really honest. So I need to
Someone
ask
who,
that
a
question.
protagonist, an opposition, an official, a team member of another team that just rubbed you up the wrong way.
Are we talking the past or present? I better not mention the present.
Well, let's go deep into your past because we've got the statute of limitations to roll back on.
One person in Formula Ford that we always was like, if he's behind you, there's a good chance you're not going to end up coming around the next lap was Christian Murchison.
Yeah, right.
You gave him a wide open, right? Because he'd have a crack in his brain and he'd end up just going straight to the side of you, taking the corner off. So in Formula Ford, 100%, that's a no-brainer, Christian Murchison.
That's it. That's the answer, Adam, because out of 40 podcasts, we've now only had three of you give an answer. Everyone else just goes, "Oh, I prefer not to answer that." That's the sucker punch.
I don't think it was a bad thing, but it was definitely in Formula Ford. It was him. He was the one that you were scared to have behind you because he could do anything.
The other one is you're clearly in a state-of-the-art workshop where again, this is a visual thing. We can see where you are. What is Adam Macro doing day to day now? You've mentioned you're nearly at Winton every week. We can see there's race cars on hoists behind you. Tell us what a week in the day in the age of 40 plus Adam Macro is.
Yeah, so I've had the last, well, January 1, I suppose, Marcus Ambrose and I have joined forces and built a little team together, looking after his daughter and Tabitha in XFLs. And he's got a beautiful property here in Tyabb and a big shed, and Tabitha lives in the house. So I'm here every day and every night and at the track every weekend. And working away, building up this little team, and obviously I had a really great little team going by myself, but we've added on, we've sort of merged together, and we've got some big plans that we want to achieve in the next in short time, and getting it all together now, and who knows what the future might hold, but we've got some stuff that we're looking forward to doing pretty soon.
That's cool.
One question from me. Advice for anyone that wants to follow the sort of path that you have. Do you have anything that you think that they should really attend to as part of that progression?
Okay, in terms of driving, get out of carts as soon as possible. Do your karting and use, don't spend or don't sell the house to fund your karting. Use karting as an apprenticeship. Learn your racecraft, learn your slipstreaming, learn your lines, learn your braking, just learn all that sort of stuff. And then as soon as you get 14, get into a car. Because so many guys think that if they go and win 85 karting championships, that Rowan Dane's going to sign them, and that's not the case, unfortunately. It's just the way it is, unfortunately. But it's amazing grounding. But I see way too many people spend every last cent trying to win every title in karts. And by the time they get to cars, yeah, they've won a heap of stuff, but budget's gone or whatever it is. So I think getting, whether it be Formula Ford or Formula V or an XL or anything, just get out of cars, get into cars and get yourself known. In terms of off track, market yourself better than I did. Get contacts. Contacts is not what you know, it's who you know. And just, you know, place yourself to, you know, to be able to, especially these days, to be able to actually, you know, get some sponsors on board and help, you know, progress through the ranks, because it's not getting any cheaper.
Good stuff.
Adam, yeah, that's amazing how an hour and 20 minutes can rush by, yeah, when you've got a 60 minute podcast to do. Thank you so much for joining us from your workshop, because it's an absolute pleasure to see, I guess, your pride and joys behind you. They're your business now. And they certainly look the part on track. We know when we're commentating an XL race, we know when one of your cars comes along, so it's got the big AMR across the front of the bonnet and other things written down the side and on the bonnet and that as well. But we know that someone's getting, first of all, really good advice prior to the race, and then just being told how to behave properly during the race. And really cool to watch a guy like you who has given us such great entertainment as a race driver, that is now bringing on the future of motorsport. And it's guys like you that have to put really responsible heads on young kids to go racing.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, we've got a great group of guys, you know, running with us now. Obviously got this year our main guys, Ashton Cadditch. He's come up through the ranks, and he's his first year last year, and he's obviously, you've heard of Wayne Cadditch. He's a relative of Wayne's, run supercars back in the day, so there's a racing sort of background there, I suppose.
Gary and I
So
attended his
he's
testimonial at Mount Panorama, and we
oh,
enjoyed
yeah.
a lot of festivities at Wayne Cadditch's
Yeah.
retirement party.
Yeah, so this year
Do you
he's
remember it, do
really
you,
dominant.
Darren? As soon as he said what, Ashton Cadditch, and then he said Wayne, I went, uh-oh.
Yeah, he got his first pole, and on the weekend, and he's really starting to come on in his second season. And obviously, looking after Tabitha Ambrose, who's doing a mega job in her first year in, you know, on the mainland, so to speak, racing from Tassie. And you know, we've got Brad James, who's he was right up the front at Sandown at the state round. He didn't do this last round, and he's last year's Vic title winner. We've got our old fart, Glenn McKenzie, who's he's always up the front in the masters category. We've got a masters category that runs over 40, so he's always winning races and doing stuff for us there. So, and we've got Ethan Grigg Gould, who drives my car, the one behind me. He's our national champion the last 2 years running. He's an absolute gun. And yeah, so we've got a bunch of people, and we have a great time together, and we go racing and just have a blast.
I got to say, on the weekend, we sent Annalise down to do some interviews in the paddock for Blendline TV coverage, and she's a schoolgirl. You know, she was there on work experience working for us, and both the girls with Tabitha and her doing the interview, really good. That, like, these two kids that are just, you know, they got a TV camera put in their face, and I know at that age, I couldn't ask a question. I probably would have just giggled or something. But Tabitha's poise was just, you look at her and you go, you're definitely Marcus's daughter. But wow, such a, how do you put it, mature young lady, and all the right answers, and I guess like Clay Richards as well, just this passion inbuilt deep down inside, and yourself, this next generation driver as well. And you just go, wow, the future's in really good hands there.
No, she's an amazing young girl, and she's a pleasure to deal with, pleasure to work with, and amazing, beautiful family, beautiful families. Marcus and Sonia, amazing, and she came down to watch Tabitha on the weekend, and no, it's amazing. It's really, really good.
Adam, thank you very much. We have run right out of time in episode number 44 of the Grassroots Racing Podcast. Thanks for your time, mate.
Cheers. Thanks, boys. Thanks a
Yeah,
lot.
thank you. Thank you.
How good was that, Gaz? We get to chat to some pretty accomplished individuals, and literally sitting there in his workshop, the whole workshop in the background. He's partnered with Marcus Ambrose, arguably one of the biggest names in Australian motorsport ever, and pressing on, champion of the development series, Formula Ford national champion, all of the ones that everyone wants to tick the boxes with. And then as soon as we flick the recording off, he picks up the laptop and takes us over to the corner to show us the nose cone off his championship winning Formula Ford. It's amazing what people hold dear, isn't it?
Well, that is particularly significant because it was the first Spectrum to win the national title.
It was, yeah, and the first Adam Macro to win the national title too.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, certainly really great to just cover the stuff that you don't remember, as he said, the stuff there that he didn't remember, and we've sort of brought it up. Just because we have had to dig into the memory banks to find it ourselves, because we tend to forget these things also.
Mate, when you called 28 races on a weekend and then you got to start digging into your memory banks as to what happened on them, I can tell you that is not easy.
Are we going to hear about this for the next
Yes.
few
Yeah,
podcasts?
until the next round. That is it for episode number 44 of the Race Fuels Grassroots Racing Podcast. We thank very much Race Fuels. By the way, they were in every state racing supplying fuel over the weekend, Gaz. So I reckon we've got our hands full. There's a very small staff that make race fuels, and on weekends like we've just had, they're spread very thin. So yeah, big shout out to race fuels, Gaz. thanks
Missy
for
boy.
your thanks for your input today. It's been good. Thanks, Gaz. That's episode 44. We'll catch you on the next one.
You've just listened to a Speed Cafe Pod Hub production.